Hello, and welcome to the That's What She Said podcast. Today I have Brandon Harvey, and I'm so excited that I might explode. So, hi.
Hey, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be talking with you today.
I'm so glad that you're here. You made me cry so hard. I shared the good newspaper, and then Brandon commented that he thanked me for sharing his work and then said that he'd been following me since he was in high school. And I just, like, it still makes me tear up because I'm like, we do so much work in the world assuming that, like, no one cares and it doesn't mean anything. And then to have someone that you admire to be, that's just crushing it and that's doing beautiful work, just, like, pop up to say that you had any influence whatsoever. It's just such an honor and a joy. So thank you for that.
Oh my gosh. Seriously, thank you. I felt the exact same way when you, like, shared about the good newspaper. I was like, how did Kristen, like, the person I learned everything from on the internet, find out about this? Like, it was such a cool moment for me because I don't know, when I first started shooting photos professionally in high school, I think that I probably Googled, like, how to run a business, or, like, how to run a photography business, somehow came across what you were doing. You know, that's maybe, you know, almost close to 10 years ago now, 8 years.
Yeah.
And I just remember soaking up everything. In fact, I bet that if I, like, went through my, like, folders on my computer, I could find some, like, old PDFs from you. I could dig through my email, find some old emails from you. The things that you taught me have been, like, hugely impactful in all of the work I do. And I still think back to some of the stuff I learned today, even though it's so far from the type of business that I used to be running. The principles still remain the same.
Well, thank you. It's pretty rad. So will you tell people about the good newspaper, which is just a stunning thing? So,
yeah, oh my gosh. So the good newspaper is a physical quarterly newspaper that's focused on the good in the world. And it kind of came from this place of me just feeling overwhelmed and exhausted by the world. And I don't know if you can tell by my voice, but I'm not somebody who often feels overwhelmed and exhausted by the world. I'm a fairly upbeat human. And so I was like, man, if politics, if division, if, you know, injustice, if all of these things are, like, weighing on me this heavily, you know, what is that like for other people? You know, like, there's got to be at least someone else who's experiencing what I'm experiencing. And so I wanted to create a tool that ultimately helps fight back against cynicism, and maybe even more than cynicism, fight back against apathy. Because I think that the easiest thing to do when you feel overwhelmed by everything going on in the world is to just check out, to be like, I am going to just watch, like, cat videos on the internet, which I love, and I'm just going to pretend that all this stuff doesn't exist. But
yep.
I think ultimately that's escapism, and you don't get to solve any of the problems. And honestly, I don't even think it's fulfilling. Like, I think that you still have the same worry and fear. It's just not front of mind anymore. It's back of mind. And so the good newspaper is this actual newspaper that's filled with good news, but we're still talking about the injustices in the world. We're still talking about systematic oppression. We're still talking about the global refugee crisis or ISIS. We're just saying, hey, where can we find the hope in these things? And then how can we join in and become a part of the solution? So that we're not sitting on the sidelines overwhelmed anymore. We're in the action, taking action, I think that makes a huge difference personally and then, you know, around the world.
Of course. And what was the timeline on So everyone sees, oh, of course, he has a big giant, like, there's the eye roll that comes with, he has a big giant social media following, and he probably just, like, thought this up one day, and then, you know, like, 3 days later, he has this Kickstarter campaign. Can you give me the timeline on it? And it's still, and when does the first issue hit, so that we have a good idea of, like, this is the trajectory of the good newspaper.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really funny, because I am a very spontaneous person. If I were on autopilot, I would never get anything done, because I just like to jump from one thing to another. And so I feel like I've become a lot more of a healthy person. And so I'm learning at least how to maybe carry things through a whole process of ideation all the way through implementation. But I will say that the Good Newspaper was a little bit more spontaneous than people assume in some ways. I think I really felt a compulsion to create the Good Newspaper in November of last year, and just kind of mulled around with the idea until around January. And in January, I just started floating the idea to some friends. I started saying, hey, what if I did this? Oh, what if there was something like this in the world? And the feedback that I got was way more excited than I expected. I expect, you know, normally when, I don't know about you, but when I float ideas around, normally people are like, oh, that's cool. Like, that's awesome. Probably because I'm giving too many ideas out to the world. Like, I'm just like constantly throwing stuff out, so people are just kind of annoyed.
Yeah.
But people were like, really, they're like, oh my gosh, you got to do this. Can I be a part of it? Can I help? And I think when people ask to help you do work, I think that's how you know that you're kind of onto something. And so from there, I started just assembling a team, bringing all this together. We launched the Kickstarter campaign in, I guess, March. And then the actual paper is going to print in 2 weeks is the goal. So by the first week of June. And so this is a pretty quick turnaround. But at the same time, I would say that the trajectory of actually being able to bring this to life was a lot longer, in that I've spent years, honestly, ever since I first started learning how to, you know, run a business in high school from you, building an audience and curating my voice and really honing in on a niche to communicate. And the message that I've always tried to put out in the world is just this idea that people's stories matter, that empathy is key, and that we can all have some sort of impact in the world. And that's totally changed over the course of years. You know, when I first started, it was me saying that to high school seniors who I was photographing their senior portraits. And, you know, my thought process was, you know, what a cool time to celebrate people, to photograph them, and to share their story in a meaningful way. And that was the message I put out in the world. Years down the road, it became me traveling internationally, shooting photos for a lot of nonprofits, saying these people who live in different parts of the world that maybe I don't understand, or maybe even I somehow have this preconception that I disagree with them or something, their story still matters. And when I show up, I learn that people are more similar than they are different, and the differences that we do have, we get to celebrate and learn from each other. And then in the last year, 2 years, I've really focused on this idea of there's a lot more good in the world than we pay attention to. And I think that that good needs to be celebrated. And so I started really leaning into that when I launched my podcast, Sounds Good with Brandon Harvey, which is just conversations with hopeful, inspiring people who are making a difference in the world. And then I also launched, kind of out of a sense of curiosity, a newsletter, an email newsletter. It goes out every single Tuesday, called The Good Newsletter. And it sounds like The Good Newspaper, very clever of us.
So clever.
So stupid. But the goal with that was just like, what if there is a lot of good news in the world? Like, what if every week I worked really hard to find it, collect it, and then share it for the sake of celebrating it so that maybe we could become it. And that process was crazy. And so I think a lot of the success of our Kickstarter campaign, the Launch the Good News paper, that, I mean, we doubled our goal, which is insane. I think a lot of that came from the years of work on the back end more than anything. Like, that's what I keep on thinking about is how this community that I just feel like I resonate with and really connect with and have a relationship with at this point after years and years and years, they came together, and that blows my mind.
Yeah, in a really beautiful way. What has been your favorite part of bringing the whole Good Newspaper to fruition? Because I would imagine that you probably didn't have a whole lot of experience with, like, printing presses and all of that stuff prior to, I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
You're 100%
physical
right.
Product in the world. So what's been your favorite part of that? And then what's been the hardest or the most challenging part? So both sides of that coin of bringing it into the world.
Man, such a good question. I think that the craziest thing is that this is a physical product. I've never made something real in my life. In fact, everything I've ever created has been really ephemeral. You know, for a few years, my main job was being a professional Snapchatter, which is genuinely the most ephemeral thing in the world. You know, I won, like, I was nominated for some awards for, like, Snapchatter of the Year for the Shorty Awards and stuff, which is, like, hilarious. But genuinely, my job was to create things that disappear. And it's, like, so sad that I had, like, years of content that nobody can ever see again. It's just, it's gone. And this is a thing that will sit on coffee tables and live in people's homes. And if we want to edit something, it's not possible. And so that whole process is insane, but also incredibly refreshing to bring something real to the world that people can hold and touch. But then there's all the logistics that go along with that. Like, how do we mail this to people? Mailing is the most expensive part of this entire newspaper. How do we make sure that we print the right number of papers? How do we make sure that we're working with the right supplier? So that whole process is so outside of my mental playing field, and it's been really tricky but really fascinating to dive into. And then I would say that the other thing that is maybe on the same lines, really refreshing but also difficult, is putting together a team. You know, it's been a process of bringing together people who can actually make this paper happen, because I can't do it on my own. You know, I just don't possess the skills to design and write and manage and advertise and interview, like, to do all these things and put them into a paper. And so I've got a team of a handful of people who we've been just, like, going back and forth over Slack and Skype and everything like crazy over the last few months, bringing this thing to life. And I'm learning, you know, what my flaws are as a manager and how I don't do well communicating, and what my strengths are and how I can lean into those and how I can bring in other people to make up for my weaknesses. And so I think that that's been incredibly fascinating and interesting. So I feel like a lot of the stuff that I've been experiencing is kind of the both and. It's incredibly difficult. Like, every day I'm just exhausted and confused and overwhelmed, but I'm also, honestly, I'm just proud that I'm able to do some of this stuff. Because, I don't know, I think that's the joy of creating something is finding out that you can create it.
Yeah, it is in some way. So I want to back up just a moment to the vast contrast between Shorty's nominated for Snapchatter of the Year and then the Good Newspaper. And how do you, like, so So I make a lot of stuff, and it brings me comfort to know that they exist in the world, even if it's just on my hard drive or something. How do you, or how did you make peace with such an ephemeral, almost like the monks that make mandalas out of sand and then just wipe them away? Like, to do that as a profession, but to call yourself a creative and then be like, well, what did you make? Like, well, you can't see it.
Yeah.
Now. How did that work? How did you make peace with that? Just talk more about that. Such an ephemeral thing, and such a, like, didn't exist for thousands of years thing. We didn't have Snapchat,
yeah.
And now we do. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So, I was fortunate enough to kind of just grow an audience on Snapchat in a really bizarre and random way, really early on in the platform. And so I really took to using it as a tool to tell stories. At first I really dismissed Snapchat. I thought that it was such a stupid idea. Why would you need something to disappear unless you're, like, sexting or something? Like, I'm fine. Like, I don't necessarily need this thing. And then they came out with the stories tool. And I was like, okay, I'm getting close to being interested. Like, I love storytelling. I wonder what I can do here. And so I decided to challenge myself to create something new on the platform every single day. And I'd actually always been interested in filmmaking, but just never had the time with all of my travel and photography to invest in it. It takes so much time to edit and to process and to import. Like, the whole ordeal is pretty rough. And all of a sudden, Snapchat was kind of like when I would shoot video with a camcorder when I was a kid, where every time that you wanted to do a new scene, you would just, like, film it. And then if it didn't work, you would rewind the tape, and then you'd film over that, and you'd do everything in order on the tape, and then you could, like, put it into your VCR, and you could watch the whole movie you made with your, like, five or six scenes in order, because you filmed it in order. You didn't have to do any editing. You just recorded it in little chunks. And I like that. I like that even though it's maybe a little bit more difficult because I have to do everything in order and plan things out, I could tell some really compelling and fun and playful stories fairly easily. And so I really leaned into it and did every single day for 100 days. And over that 100 days, I gained tens of thousands of followers. And at first, I was actually really sad when I gained a lot of followers, because the thing is, I remember one of the days that was that I saw the huge spike in my audience. You know, somebody, a huge account, had kind of shouted me out because they'd seen my work, and I was like, man, last week I made the best story of my life, and none of these thousands and thousands of people will ever get to see it. Just, you know, a few hundred people got to see it. And so that was, like, really sad to think about. But at the same time, it was so incredibly motivating from a creative standpoint to think, well, these people have never seen anything from me in their life. They followed me blindly without ever seeing anything from me just based off of somebody's word. So I've got to show them what I'm capable of. And so it challenged me to constantly be creating something better, because every day new people showed up to see what I was creating, and they had no idea what I was capable of. And so I couldn't rely on my past work. I could only rely on my future work. And so it really taught me about this idea of kind of not just, like, treading water, or not just relying on past successes to carry me through. I don't think that momentum is very long lasting. And so I think that was a really refreshing thing. But it really is difficult to think about stuff going away. I guess the other side of that, though, is every single day I try to share Instagram photos, or, you know, a lot of people share blog posts. And while those have a little bit longer of a shelf life, it's still pretty rare to, like, dive back into, like, an old Instagram. You know, it's like, I don't remember the last time that that I, like, went back to find an old Instagram that I loved from somebody from like a year ago. So there is a shelf life to everything. You know, blog posts, aside from like SEO stuff and things showing back up on social media, you know, those have a shelf life of, you know, maybe a little bit longer than 24 hours like Snapchat, but it goes away. And so, you know, even our newspapers, we did some test prints about 3 months ago, and the test prints are already kind of turning a little bit yellow, which I actually think is like a little bit cool. Like, I think it looks really awesome. But, you know, even the things physical and real, that's going to go away at some point. And so I can't just rely on that. I've got to keep on moving forward, keep on focusing on what's the next thing I can create, what's the next thing that I can bring into the world.
Yeah, that sounds amazing and also exhausting. So how do you stay?
Oh, my gosh.
How do you stay? What fills you up? How do you stay a healthy human being, not one who's just consumed every day by screens and Snapchat and social media and all the things you're bringing into the world, which are worthwhile, but my God, there's so many of them.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's definitely been a process. Like, it has not been easy. I think that the biggest thing for me has been learning more about self-awareness. So I've just been really trying to understand myself and what my life is like on autopilot, because we all have an autopilot. And I think that we all have a little bit of a different autopilot, but left unchecked and unconscious, we veer into a mode that is, I don't want to say unhealthy, but like sub-healthy. It's just a little bit, it's not quite us operating at our best. And so for me, in my self-awareness, I've learned that left unchecked, I would be constantly consuming. Like every single day, every single hour, I would have headphones in, I'd be listening to podcasts, I'd be watching videos, I would be reading. Like, I'd never give myself time to think. And I survived like that for years, just constantly putting stuff in my brain. And if I'm honest, it's probably so that I don't have to, like, hear myself think, and so that I can avoid conflict or pain or struggles. And that's fine and good for a time, but I think that good things that you bring to the world, true art, true creativity, comes from some of that conflict and some of those struggles and that pain that is in those off moments, or at least for me, because that's something that I probably struggle with more so. And I think the art comes from the struggle. And so I've been learning to take time to unplug from my audience, so that I'm not constantly feeling weighed down by, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, you know, unplug from consumption, so that it fights comparison, it fights overwhelming my senses. And like this morning, I woke up really early. Oftentimes, I'd like to start my day with a podcast, which, speaking it out loud, I'm like, oh, that's probably not super healthy for what I need to be doing. But today, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go on a run. And I went on a run, put on some instrumental music, and one Miley Cyrus song. And just,
course.
Like, enjoyed it. Yeah, it's her new song, Malibu, so good.
Yes,
but I went on the run and I was like able to process and think and move through some ideas and it grounded me. And so I can't say that I'm perfect at this by any means. I still have a long ways to go. But I think that becoming more self-aware and then trying to take myself off autopilot every once in a while has been incredibly helpful. For all of this, for the Snapchat, for the newspaper, the whole process.
Yeah, seems good. Something that stuck out to me, because I don't think the vast majority of people will never have the problem, but I want to talk a little bit more about it, which is unplugging from your audience and the weight of hundreds of thousands of people. How does that affect you? How do you carry that? How does that play out, and how have you learned to deal with that, because you're not a Kardashian. You didn't start out that way. You started out with zero like everyone else. How did you learn to handle that weight as time has gone on?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I think a really important question. You just said, you know, a lot of people won't deal with it, but I actually think that a lot of people will, and maybe not to the extent that I have, and certainly not to the extent that the Kardashians have, but I think that the trajectory of the internet with kind of the democratization of ideas and thoughts is allowing for, I think that, you know, if we were to think about like big celebrities in the past, we have people like Marilyn Monroe, who was just, everybody knew who she was. Everybody knew her name. Just, she was the epitome of a celebrity. Today, we have very few people like that. I think maybe a Taylor Swift would be a close one. You know, politicians are probably close ones, but the reality is that there's no celebrities who appeal to everybody anymore, because everybody can find their own person that they admire. And so, I think that we're all going to become like tiny little micro Marilyn Monroes, where instead of a billion people knowing who she is, you know, we all have a few thousand people who know who we are. And sure, some of those people are our friends or our family, but there will always be the strangers. And so the reality is that we'll all kind of have some of that experience to some extent, and especially as we move forward and the internet just continues to do what it does. But it's been a real process having an audience. It's been really interesting, and I'm incredibly thankful for it. Like and again, I don't want to like keep on like tooting your horn, but I'm going to. I think that you early on really, when I was reading, you know, a lot from you about like how to kind of connect with an audience and how to really bring together a community. I think that's where a lot of my early ideas came from, because I started building out an audience, sharing the things that I was creating when I was in high school, and it certainly wasn't a big audience, but it was. There were some strangers in there. I was doing that on Twitter and on Flickr and on Facebook. And as time went on, I was able to build a bigger and bigger audience. And I think one of the big things I can attribute to that is choosing to be vulnerable online, choosing to share not just the high moments in my life, but some of the low moments. And I did that because I just genuinely wanted to connect with my community that I was building. And I think I've learned through the process that we connect far more with people's weaknesses than their strengths. We'll always connect more with people's failures than their triumphs. And so I think that's been a big reason why the audience has grown. But it's a double-edged sword, too, because when you've got a lot of people who feel a close connection, a lot of conversations can end up feeling really heavy. And did you listen to the Missing Richard Simmons podcast?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
So I actually didn't, but there's this really good article in NPR. Or by NPR that dove into that podcast and kind of the unique nature of Richard Simmons and how he, for years and years and years, he was completely available to people. He, you know, if somebody's like, hey, I'm going through a hard time, like, he would show up for them. He would hop on phone calls with people. He would have long conversations with people. And then, you know, the reason the podcast exists is because just one day that stopped and people just stopped hearing from him. And they were like, what happened to Richard Simmons? And this article on NPR talks about the weight of having an audience and the things that people say to you. And so they use some examples, like Richard Simmons would get, you know, some people's comments saying things like, they're not comments, they're like letters or phone calls or people walking up to them on the streets. They'd be saying things like, Richard, I wouldn't be alive today without you. And if you ever stop doing what you're doing, I don't know if I could still keep on living. And that's a heavy comment. And that person isn't meaning to add that weight to Richard Simmons, but it's a really, really, it's not an easy thing to handle. And so the author of this article said that that's a comment written on a boulder. And Richard Simmons, when he was given those boulders, for years and years and years, he would carry those boulders and he would hold on to them and he would try to do what he could with them. And then there's another kind of comment that's written on feathers or on paper that's basically like, Richard, thank you for what you've done. I really appreciate it. It's past tense. It's like, what you've done is already enough for me. It means a lot. Thank you. And since I read that article a few weeks ago, I've been thinking a lot about that. I don't deal with that at all to the extent that Richard Simmons did. But I think that it's a really interesting thing to think about in that when you have an audience, it can feel overwhelming at times when people place expectations on you. And some of those expectations are fair. You know, like some people's expectations are that I'm going to mail them a newspaper in a few weeks, and I will live up to that expectation. But some expectations are more implicit. It's, you know, don't stop doing this because I need it. And it's something that comes with the territory, but it's also a really interesting thing. And so I've been learning how to just not ground myself in my audience or in my influence or the work that I do and try to ground myself in the people that truly know me. And I've kind of given permission to speak into my life. I try to ground myself in the things that are more tangible in my life than the things that are intangible, like numbers and kind of the ether that is an audience. And so, I guess all that to say, it's complex, it's really tricky, and again, I feel like self-awareness is kind of the key. I don't think anybody's figured out what it's like to have an audience on the internet. I think that there's no rule book for this, and everybody's just trying to figure out how to be healthy and not cross lines, and that's certainly what I'm trying to do, is just be aware and process through these things and try to be healthy for the sake of myself and my family, but also for my audience, because I really do want to give them something meaningful and helpful. And if I'm just constantly burnt out or overwhelmed or carrying these big boulders, I'm not able to do that for anybody. And so I'm just trying to lean into help where I can and be aware of the times that I can't.
Yeah, it sounds like a tricky balance, because you do get, I'm like thinking of my inbox, and I'm like, oh, you do get boulders. And then you're like, I don't want to pick that up. Thank you. So, but you look at, it's a tricky balance, and you are wise, which brings me to the fact that you are not old. So do people call you a baby is my first question. And the second question is, what is your advice for the people that are crushing it and doing amazing things and they're under 30? And so somehow in the quote unquote adult's eyes, that makes what they're doing less serious or less important or less wise or whatever, because I'm sure that that happened, because you were 17 and professionally photographing. Like, that's like, oh, you're just, and how have you learned to reconcile the fact that people are going to write you off and you keep doing it anyway, and what do you have to say to those people that have been called babies, or you're so young, or you don't know, or bless your heart,
yeah,
or all of that stuff? How do you deal with that?
Well, to start off, I will say that though your listeners can't see me right now, I do look almost exactly like the emoji baby. I've got the little blonde curl. I've got the little blue eyes. I look like the little white emoji baby. So, yes, I do get called a baby, mostly for that reason. I think this is something else that I've tried to be really intentional about. I remember when I was 16 or 17 and I started shooting photos professionally, and I started connecting with other people who were doing really ambitious, great work so young. And I saw some of them really leaning into their age from a publicity standpoint. And they would be like, I'm a 16-year-old photographer, and that's what makes me wonderful, and you should hire me, which I think is I think it's wonderful. I think it's a really good idea to kind of lean into that strength. But I chose not to go that route at all. My thought process was, if I kind of brand myself around my age, well, one day my age will change. One day I'll be 30, and I'll just be a photographer, and I won't be the young photographer anymore. And, you know, for him, it was just a novelty. You know, people would be like, oh, I hired this 16-year-old kid. He's so talented. But, like, that's the talking point. And I would rather people have the talking point be something else. You know, I hired this photographer. He's so talented. He tells stories amazingly. You know, I don't know exactly what it was. But my I knew that I didn't want to brand myself around being young. And so for years, I actually never told anybody my age. If somebody asked me my age, I would never lie, but I'd be like, yes. And then I'd be like, yeah, you're close, you know. I just never really, like, owned up to it. And certainly online, I never shared my age. And I just started sharing my age a few years ago. I'm 24 now. And still, that feels, like, too young to be doing some of this stuff. But it's certainly a tricky thing because I do get people who kind of look down on me for my age. And I don't know what to do about that. You know, it's just, I hope to not do the same when I'm older. But I understand. I understand the thought process. And so I just try to really over communicate my experience when I'm in, like, meetings or when I'm meeting somebody who I can tell the age is a qualifying factor for them. I'll talk about the work that I've done or the brands that I've partnered with or the processes that I take my work through and how seriously I take the things that I do. I think that's kind of the core of what I do, but I would say it is so fun to think about being so young. I wouldn't say that I'm a professional Snapchatter anymore. Like, I still have probably the same audience size, but I don't do it as much. I'm focused much more on, like, a newspaper and stuff. And it's cool to think about the success that I had on Snapchat a few years ago and how that was just one story in my life. And it isn't the peak of my life. And so I think it's really fun for me to do things that I'm really proud of and feel like they took all of my strength and all of my work and all of my hustle. And then it feels good to do all of that and then realize I still have years left in my life to beat that. Like, I can continue to top it. And so I think that's the upside is that one day the successes I have, you know, I've had in my 20s, my hope is that those will pale in comparison to the things that I build in my 30s, and that'll happen again in my 40s and again in my 50s. And so I guess that's it. But it's tricky. I would say for other people who are young and creative and hustling on something, find other people like you. Find other people who are young and trying to figure stuff out. There's a lot of people in the world who are doing that, and it's so good to have conversations and talk with them. Don't feel like you're competing with anybody, because you're just competing with yourself, and the alliances and relationships and friendships that you build along the way will serve you for years. Like, it's so cool to think about when I was 16 and I connected, there's four photographers in particular that I really connected with on Flickr. Five. That I connected with, and we were all 15, 16 doing photography work. We're all still connected. We're all kind of in similar industries. One works for Visco, the editing company, and it's so fun that, like, we work together in that kind of capacity of, like, oh, cool, like, how can I help you guys out? One other friend is a super talented photographer in Texas, and I admire her work so much and love to get to share it. It's really meaningful, and it makes a difference in the world. Another photographer, we got married kind of at the same age, and so it's been really nice to kind of learn from each other about what it's like to be young and married and doing work that we're proud of. And then one other person, I just remembered this, I admired his work so much. I followed him for years. One day he retweeted a girl. I thought that this girl was super cute. I hit the follow button. Now that girl is my wife. Super random.
Yes.
But, like, I met my wife through this random photographer friend that we started following each other because she was also my age and shooting photos. And, like, I don't know. So you never – that's – I'm not telling you that if you're young and doing stuff and connecting with people, you're going to meet your future partner. But but I did. And it's
– I like it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's so funny. But, yeah, I would say lean on other people and don't be afraid to go after the things you want to do.
I like it. Can you tell us a story from your childhood that would let us see the person you've become as an adult? That's like, oh, there he is. That's what's happening right there.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good question. When I was 15, that's when I first started to get into photography, and I was so blown away to find a mentor early on who kind of took me underneath her wing and taught me photography, but also, you know, how to run a photography business and how to use my platform to give back to people. And then, of course, all the nitty-gritty, how to edit photos, what different lenses did, and how to use a flash, you know, all these things. But through the whole process, she really did. She taught me about the kind of more intangible things. And I remember one time she invited me out to do a photo shoot for this single mom who otherwise just would not have been able to afford photos of her and her kids. And it was such a cool life-giving experience to use my unique strengths and abilities at the time, which was photography and probably conversation, to make a difference in somebody's life. And, you know, it's not the biggest thing in the world. It's not like I was, like, feeding this person. But it was me doing what I could. And I think I've taken that idea through the years and tried to say, how can I use the unique platform and talents and abilities and passions I have to make a difference in a way that nobody else can? You know, I've been invited by a lot of nonprofits to do a lot of things. Last year, a nonprofit said, Brandon, why don't you come out to this really cool country? We'll build a house together. And at first I was like, oh, cool. Like, I love traveling. Like, that sounds great. It'll be kind of a workout. Maybe I'll get, like, really strong or tan or something. But then I realized,
so
like, I genuinely, yeah, I would love to be buff. But the thing about that is that I have no ability to build things. Like, that is not in my wheelhouse. And it would, like, if I'm going to spend a few thousand dollars or if the organization's going to spend a few thousand dollars to fly me out somewhere, like, why don't we just spend that few thousand dollars and hire somebody who lives locally to build this thing? Like, I don't think that I need to do that. Whereas my friend Colin, who is my roommate growing up, or my roommate in college, he's an architect. He understands the construction process, the building process. He can go and he can show up and he can make a huge impact with his unique skills and abilities and passions. Whereas for me, that's not me leaning into my strength to make a difference. And so I think that moment early on taught me, hey, what if I could use the things that are unique to me to do something in the world? And that's, in a lot of ways, what I think of the Good Newspaper and my podcast and my newsletter as is an opportunity for me to use my weird years of history and backstory, you know, my weird connection to celebrity through Snapchat and my background running a business with photography and my heart for making a difference in the world and trying to step in for against, like, injustice. You know, how can I bring all of these things to the table? And I hope that I'm creating something that only I could create. And I hope that it's making a difference in people's lives in a way that only I can. And then my only hope would be that all of that would inspire other people to do the same and use their unique talents and abilities and passions and relationships and platforms to create something that matters to the world and that makes a difference in the world.
That's beautiful and wise. How has all this storytelling changed you as a human?
I would
say, if we look at you at 15 and we look at you now, what is all this people's stories moving through you and your stories moving through you too? How has that shaped you as a human?
I think it's continued to build a sense of empathy, which I think has become one of the most inspiring characteristics in another person is their amount of empathy. And so I'm pursuing that in my own life. But I think the amount of stories I've gotten to tell and the amount of stories I've gotten to consume has really inspired me to empathize and understand what other people's lives are like and really put myself in other people's shoes, not in a way that's sympathy, which is kind of looking down and understanding somebody, but empathy, which is like being there and being present and feeling and experiencing things with people. I'm not even close to 1% of where I'd like to be or even close to 1% of some of the people that I talk to on my podcast or interview for the paper. But that's the trajectory that I think storytelling has taken me down. And the more empathetic I become, I think the better my stories become. And so it's this really cool cycle that I think I've become addicted to and have really fallen in love with, even though really I've got a long way to go.
Oh, yeah, we all do, but that's a good pursuit, a good, healthy, solid pursuit. What brings you the most – you strike me as an incredibly hopeful person. And so what brings you the most hope for the world at this very moment?
I would say over the last few months, I've become super interested in data. Every single week, I share these 5 hopeful stories from around the world in the Good Newsletter, and it really – gets me to pay attention to the good that's happening in the world, even when it feels like things are burning down or falling apart or there's more division and fear than ever. And some of the most motivating stuff has just been data, to look at the world and say, oh my gosh, well, there's a lot of aspects of the world that are broken and there's a lot of injustices that have yet to be made just, there is a huge significant trajectory towards good in the world. And if you had to be born like at any time in the world without knowing your gender, nationality, orientation, religion, anything, you would hands down choose 2017. And there's all kinds of data. Like last week, I just shared a story in the Good Newsletter that people with HIV are living 10 years longer than they used to. And so now most people with HIV, especially in the United States and stuff, are dying from things that aren't HIV. They're dying from you know, the things that normal people die from. And that's incredible. That's inspiring. You know, women's education is up around the world, and that bumps up, you know, national GDPs and all kinds of fancy statistics because, like, women are amazing. There's less deaths from war now than at almost any time in history. The amount of violent crime is down in the United States. You know, looking at all these numbers and statistics is so, like, inspiring and helpful to be like, wow, like, the work we've been doing for years actually makes a difference. And it doesn't mean that we get to, like, let up on the gas. Like, it just means that we can, like, full on, like, zoom forward. And so I think that's really, really cool. And then, you know, you've got these statistics, these big numbers, but when you're looking at millions and millions of people in a spreadsheet, you do lose that ability to empathize. You can be like, wow, this is a cool number, but what I love doing is, you know, is thinking about one specific person when I look at this data. So, you know, with HIV, people living 10 years longer, I think back to when I was in Rwanda with the incredible organization RED, and I was learning about HIV and AIDS and the amazing work that RED and the Global Fund have done in Rwanda. And so I was about to see, whoo, that's amazing. I was in Rwanda learning about the incredible work that RED and the Global Fund are doing to fight AIDS in 7 countries in Africa. And I got to know specific people, and I could, like, close my eyes and see their faces and hear their stories of you know, mothers who were HIV positive and their children were born without HIV, which is, like, incredible that drugs can do that, and that these mothers, because of, like, the amazing new drugs that they're taking, they're going to, like, live to see their grandchildren and potentially even their great-grandchildren. Like, I know it's going to make a difference in this one person's life, and then I get to just multiply that by the millions and millions and millions of people in that data. And so I guess to answer your question, there's a lot that's giving me hope because there's a lot to be hopeful about even when it doesn't feel like the reality. And also what's maybe even more hopeful than seeing the success that we've already had is seeing people who are motivated by the things that aren't hopeful. You know, where's the injustice? Where's the brokenness? How can I step in and be a part of the solution? That's the most hopeful thing. Seeing more and more people, I feel like this year more than ever, saying, how can I make a difference? How can I step in and play a role? That's really exciting.
That is. It's beautiful. So if we want to come and follow and subscribe and give you dollars and all that good stuff, where do we start with your work? And then with any podcast that has more than about 10 episodes, like, oh, God, I can't. Where do I begin? So do you have a favorite episode as well to start people off in the direction of hope and goodness?
Oh, my goodness. Such a good question. So you can find everything about the podcast and the newsletter and the newspaper in one place. My company that we launched around the same time as the newspaper is called Good, 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 because it holds Sounds Good, the Good Newsletter, the Good Newspaper. Again, super original idea. Good, Good, Good. And that's at goodgoodgood.co. And so you can totally check out goodgoodgood.co check out the podcast, newsletter, newspaper. If you subscribe pretty fast, you'll be still one of the first people to get the newspaper, which is really fun. As far as the podcast goes, one of our most, I think it is our most popular episode ever, is a conversation with Jedediah Jenkins. Jedediah was one of the original folks who ran the organization Invisible Children, which really brought light to the terrible things happening in Africa through the LRA. And he I think that the organization really motivated an entire generation of people, my generation, to want to make a difference in the world because they figured out that they actually could. Invisible Children gave people the tools to contact the representatives, you know, as a 16, 17-year-old, 18-year-old, and say, this is something I care about. And then it actually made a difference. You know, it actually had an impact. What a cool, motivating thing. But Jedediah was one of the kind of people who made that organization come to life. But more recently, he biked all the way from Oregon to Patagonia. So basically all the way down North America and then all the way down South America to the very tip, almost to Antarctica, on a bicycle over the course of months. And he just thinks about the world so beautifully, so incredibly. I have a lot of admiration for this guy, and it's one of our most popular episodes. So I would say check that one out because I love it and other people seem to like it. But then dive through and pick out one or two from somebody you've never heard of because while we've got some names that people will definitely recognize, everybody's on the show for a reason. We've got some incredible people that I've been so proud to talk to.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So I'm totally going to, just because I wonder, your favorite book at the moment and your favorite podcast at the moment, because I feel like you consume a lot of stuff, and then, like, what's the good stuff?
Oh, my gosh. That's such a good question. Am I allowed to just pick, like, three podcasts? Because I'm going to have a hard time narrowing it down. Okay, I love my three favorite podcasts right now. Our Reply All by Gimlet. It's a show about the internet, and it is so good. I love this show, Flash Forward. It is a show about possible futures. Every single episode, it brings experts in to dream about what the future could look like. Sometimes it's like, what would happen if a giant volcano exploded? But also it's like, what would happen if all of a sudden we all had the ability to understand everybody's language? What would that do for us as a culture? You know, that's a really fun show. And then this is a super dorky, geeky one. This is a show called Dear Hank and John that is from two really popular, well-respected YouTubers, Hank Green and John Green, the creators of VidCon, and John Green wrote The Fault in Our Stars, among other books. And
yeah,
these two brothers, they're incredible. They're like two of my favorite people that I admire the most. And their podcast is this perfect balance of absolute fluffy garbage that is completely meaningless but so entertaining, and then the most meaningful, important conversations coming from a place of wisdom and science and data. And the way that they bring those things together is so refreshing and inspiring to me. And that's kind of something that I dream of being for my audience and for myself, for the people around me. And so those are three things I love. And then this is super funny and bizarre, but I've been rereading, or actually just reading the book 1984, George Orwell's 1984. And as I started reading it, I thought that I was reading Fahrenheit 451, and I was like, man, when are we going to find out that this guy's a firefighter? And then and then he never became a firefighter, and I got like a third of the way to the book, and I was like, oh, wait, I've never read this before. And so I think it's been really fun to just read kind of a classic, timeless book that everybody knows, and I thought that I knew, but I'm just like coming into it with a totally fresh perspective. And it's just, it's a fantastic book, and it's as somebody who's like really optimistic and hopeful, it's maybe healthy for me to read something that that puts a tiny bit of cynicism into the world in a beautiful way for the sake of kind of finding this balance and finding, you know, everything can't always just be all like happy and hunky dory. I really want to make sure that my hope and optimism is coming from a meaningful place. And so sometimes it's nice to double check myself against something like 1984, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Sadly, we are out of time, but is there anything else that you think I should have asked or that you would just like to say to people or otherwise just kind of close? You have the floor.
Oh, my gosh. Kristen, I'm just so thankful that we got to talk today. I think it's I just think it's so serendipitous and maybe even poetic that we're getting to have this conversation, because I've admired you for so long. I've learned so much from you, and I continue to learn from you. And so it's really fun. And also, oh my gosh, congratulations on quitting Facebook. I am incredibly excited for you and very jealous. I think that's a fantastic idea.
It might not seem so fantastic, but at some point, but for right now, it seems very, very necessary. So, yeah, well, thank you. I mean, this is just a mutual admiration society at this point. I can't wait to see what you do next, and I can't wait for my good newspaper to arrive, because it's going to be so good.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And, I'm going to get back to work on that today. We're doing final edits as we speak.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Brandon.
Thank you so much, Kristen. Have an awesome day.